Ikui luna, all rise. Kenohone ka aha ho'okolokolo ho'oki iku e o kaluna kana wai hanohano o Leonard. Ame kaluna kana wai hanohano o Hiraoka. Ame kaluna kana wai hanohano o Wadsworth e ho'omalunei. The Intermediate Court of Appeals is now in session. The Honorables Leonard Hiraoka and Wadsworth presiding. Inohui lalo, please be seated.
Good morning. Appearances, please. Go ahead, call the case. Might as well.
Okay. Case number CAAP-23-409, State of Hawaii versus Kamale Wilmer de Lima. Arguing for appellant, Sarah K. Haley, Deputy Public Defender. Also appearing, Benjamin E. Lowenthal, Deputy Public Defender. Arguing for appellee, Mr. Robert T. Nakatsuji, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, and Michelle M. L. Pu'u, Deputy Attorney General. Argument on the merits.
Okay, thank you. Why don't we make our appearances anyway?
Deputy Public Defender Sarah Haley, and appearing on behalf of Kamale Wilmer.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Robert Nakatsuji on behalf of the State of
Hawaii. Good morning, Your Honors. Michelle Pu'u, Deputy Attorney General, also appearing for the State of Hawaii, for the Department of the Attorney General.
Thank you. Please be seated. Okay, Ms. Haley, I understand you would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
That's correct.
Okay, you want to?
Yeah.
Please.
Ms. Chief Judge, and may it please the court. This case hinges on the distinction between modifications of a single condition of probation and enlarging the terms and conditions of probation. Motions that modify probation conditions change an existing probation condition and do not toll probation. Enlarging the conditions tacks on a new condition to the original judgment of conviction, so it tolls. The case here encompasses a series of modifications, not enlargements, to the single condition that Mr. Wilmer de Lima spend a year in jail subject to early release. These modifications do not toll the original 4-year term, and so the court did not have the power to ultimately resentence him to prison. Mr. Wilmer de Lima was sentenced to probation, and one of the conditions was to serve a year in jail subject to early release to treatment, and he was released before that year was completed. Another term required him to report to his probation officer. Time and again, the court modified these conditions by ordering more and more jail time and to report to probation, but no new terms were added to the original sentence. These modifications did not trigger the tolling provision. These are not enlargements to the conditions of probation, but rather change the two already existing probation conditions. The plain language of HRS Section 706.627 supports this distinction. The probation period is under the statute, the probation period is only told for, quote, a motion to revoke probation or a motion to enlarge the conditions imposed thereby. When read together with HRS Section 706.625, it is clear that there are other types of motions and that those motions do not trigger a tolling of probation. A motion to modify is not tolled, and that motion is expressed through the language in subsection 4 of HRS Section 706.625. And I'll read here in relevant part. That's, quote, the court may modify the requirements imposed on the defendant if it finds, and skipping ahead, if it finds that such action will assist the defendant in leading a law-abiding life. I'd also note in subsection 4 that there is a clear distinction between motions that modify and motions that enlarge. In full, that section provides the court may modify the requirements imposed on the defendant, that's modification, or impose further requirements if it finds that such action will assist the defendant in leading a law-abiding life. The or indicates that those are two different actions, one a motion to modify a condition and one a motion to enlarge the conditions. Because the plain language is unambiguous, the analysis should stop there.
Counsel?
Yes.
So in terms of the definition of the word modify, I think you submitted to us a couple of definitions, one from Webster's, I believe, and one from Black's Law Dictionary. At least the Webster's Dictionary, I believe, defined the word modify in part as, quote, to make minor changes in, and, quote, to make basic or fundamental changes in, unquote. So I assume you would agree that the word modify can mean change. Is that correct?
Yes, and that is our position.
So modify and change are synonyms, right?
That is our interpretation, yes.
And change can be large or small, right?
Well, our position is that the change here would be on the smaller end for a modification. But yes, they could be large or small potentially.
Okay. And if change can be large or small, can change encompass enlargements or reductions in the subject that's being changed?
Well, so first I would say we did include those definitions, and I think on the whole they indicate smaller change when you look at all the different options of those definitions. However, ultimately, the language of the statute itself and how it's written shows maybe more specificity than you would see in a general definition under Black's Law or under Webster. So in this case, the language of the statute itself indicates different options, and including reduction. That's another option that was discussed in the briefing.
So you're saying the plain meaning of modify can mean to reduce or to enlarge, but in the context of this statute, it can't mean enlarge? Is that your position? Well,
yes. And I would say that the general definitions, you know, that there's a lot of different options under them. So I think when you read, and I don't think they can provide some guidance, but I don't think they trump how the actual language of the statute is written, which separates a modification from an enlargement.
It is if you read the words sort of in exclusion, right? I mean, you're assuming that the or means that these are two different.
Yes, and that is our
two
position.
Different things, right?
Yeah. I would note that if you read a change or a modification too broadly or enlargement too broadly, you know, you could say, oh, well, does it include reduction? Now, clearly, reduction is not, I think no one's arguing that a reduction in the conditions would be told. So clearly there are other types of motions or ways to change for probation conditions that don't toll. So I would also encourage the court, you know, and I think when we're talking about form versus substance, to look at what was actually ordered here, regardless of what the title of the motions were.
Well, since you mentioned form versus substance, one of the state's arguments here is that even though the title of the nine motions at issue is motion for modification, the substance of the motion was to enlarge the conditions through additional jail time. So their argument is that these were clearly motions, to enlarge or to... and that was the modification.
So, and I was hoping to address this because our argument shows that it's more than just the title. And we would not argue it's just the title. You say modification, therefore it's modification. Or even the flip side, you say it's an enlargement, it's necessarily enlargement. We have to look at what was actually ordered. So our position is that because a one-year term of imprisonment was already ordered, this is a change that's just imposing more of that 1 year. So it's not enlarging, it is simply changing an already pre-existing condition. Enlarging would be adding a new term to the conditions of probation. And so I think, you know, looking with a bigger lens of potentially other cases, you'd need to look at what the court's actually ordering, because the state could even
but
style.
The one-year term was a condition of probation, correct? And when he was resentenced to the five-year indeterminate, he was given credit?
He was given, I believe he was given credit for time served when he was resentenced.
When
yes.
he was resentenced. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the 1 year term, as I recall, was There was a, it was conditional, right? It was,
yes.
I think it was serve a term of imprisonment of 1 year subject to early release upon the discretion of the adult client services branch after your acceptance and entry into a bona fide residential treatment program, credit given for time served.
Yes. And he was released to a treatment program before the 1 year expired.
So I don't want to interrupt your flow, but I do have a couple of housekeeping issues I wanted to cover on the issue of jurisdiction. So your notice of appeal is from orders of resentencing, which is a little bit untimely, perhaps, and you've made some arguments on why we should consider the appeal from those orders as well as the orders on the motion to correct the illegal sentence. But I want to be clear. Are you arguing based on ineffective assistance of counsel in four cases, which is your office, right? Your office represented them, that we should relax the deadline for the notices of appeal from four orders of resentencing? Is that your argument?
So our argument would be that we are appealing from the order that was denying our motion to correct a legal sentence. Now, if that was, if we were successful in that, that would go back to the resentencing. So,
okay, so
but we're also
wait,
late
but
on that.
But that's not answering my question.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you're appealing from, yeah, I mean, there's four cases here, right? So
yes.
There's the original order of resentencing in each case, correct?
Yes.
There was no timely appeal filed from those original orders?
Not within 30 days, no.
Okay. And in the briefs, it seemed like you were arguing that we should relax the deadline and consider taking jurisdiction and ruling on those orders on this appeal. And I'm asking you to clarify if that's your request.
So
and the basis for it.
Yes. So we are asking that the relaxing of 30 days, we appealed from the order. So, okay, sorry, going on the timeline, there's the resentencing. We timely filed a motion to correct a legal sentence after that. From there, then once that was denied, there's the final issue where some of the orders were filed at different times. So we were over the 30 days for some of those, and we were not one. So for, I guess, moving backwards, we're asking for you to relax the 30-day as to from the order denying the motion to correct a legal sentence.
Okay.
So
let me say it back to you so I understand, because jurisdiction is one of those things we take a hard look at. So you're not asking us to rule directly on the order of resentencing in the four cases. You are asking us to rule on the order denying motion to correct illegal sentence in each of the four cases, including the one where you missed the 30 days. That's it.
That's right.
Okay. But,
and by ruling on that, that would eventually reach the resentencing orders because
And it is your position that there's no difference in the relief that could be granted if we agreed with your position?
Correct.
Okay.
We're asking you to relax it a little bit, but not that much.
No. And I apologize for interrupting, but I wanted to be clear.
Oh, no. I hoped we'd discuss that as well.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I left off with that we should stop at plain language analysis. However, if the court does feel that it is still ambiguous, we also can look to legislative history. So the legislative history also supports our interpretation. From the statute's enactment and through amendments, the term modify the requirements imposed on the defendant, end quote, has been distinct from following terms. So first we had add further requirements, which appeared in the original 1972 enactment and was later amended to impose further requirements. So add was changed to impose, and that occurred in 1985. We also had the separate term increase the requirements imposed thereby, which appeared in the 1972 enactment until amendment to 1986, and that's when we saw that enlarge the conditions language. We also had introduced the reduction language. So that came in, reduce or enlarge the conditions, and that was added the 1986 amendment. So from its enactment, we had separate language indicating modification. I'd also note that neither the term modify the requirements or any variation thereof have ever been included in the as being tolled or in the tolling statute through all the amendments. Further, our reading is sensible and does not conflict with the legislative intent. It is sensible because it takes a more limited view of what should be tolled. Minor changes to existing conditions do not toll and effectively extend the probation period for long periods of time. Further, the legislature added a tolling provision because it was concerned with the period of probation running out pending an important hearing to either revoke probation altogether and resentence or add to the conditions. These tolling provisions are less important, the modification ones, when there is only a change to an existing term. Finally, if the different terms in these statutes remain unclear to the court, then the rule of lenity requires this court to strictly construe the statute and rule in our favor. For these reasons, we would ask the court to vacate the legal sentences of imprisonment in all four cases.
So I do have one more question for you. In your opening brief, and there's not a lot of argument on it, but you do have an argument that says there's no cogent reasons supporting Judge Murakawa's action or inaction. It's on her modification of prior orders, which notably omitted any language extending or tolling the four-year period of Mr. Wilbur de Lima's probation, and instead ordered the terms. And I thought you were getting around to whether he had notice, but you never really argued it. In other words, I thought you were maybe getting around to an argument that he didn't have notice during all of those nine orders that he was subject to his probation term rolling over and over. But did you make that argument?
So I think that there's two areas where that was, I think, suggested at. So we are not arguing, and to the extent that our opening brief maybe mentioned that, we think this should be decided as through statutory interpretation, not through notice. Okay. So I know it was mentioned with due process notice, and there's some law of the case arguments, but our position now is that we should focus on statutory interpretation. That's what we think would be the best way to resolve this case.
Ms. Haley, addressing the legislative history, doesn't one of the Senate Judiciary Committee reports say that the purpose of the bill is to amend the existing law by providing for tolling of the period of probation whenever a motion to, and I'm skipping words, increase the requirements imposed is filed? Doesn't that pretty much state that tolling should have applied in our case?
So in answer to your question, no. I think, again, the increase the requirements imposed thereby is an enlargement. And that's a separate term and has been a separate term from the modification language throughout the amendments. So the modification language, which is modify the requirements imposed on the defendant, is a separate term, as has remained separate, and that includes in the discussions of legislative intent.
Well, the state and the defense are arguing about the words meaning different things. So if you look at the legislative history, a motion to increase the requirements imposed was intended to be a tolling motion, according to the legislature.
Yes.
And so increasing a sentence from one to an open five isn't that increasing the requirements imposed?
Oh, are you talking about the final resentencing where they were resentenced, where it was a motion to revoke probation and they were resentenced to the 5 and 10 year term? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So we're not arguing that the motion to revoke probation time period should not be told. So we're talking about the prior motions for modification. There was increases in jail time through those modifications. Our position is those increases of jail time, often it was time served or a few more days, were modifying or changing the already existing probation condition that was 1 year term of imprisonment with early release.
They're increasing the prison time.
They are imposing more of the 1 year term.
So which is increasing the jail time.
Well, that's one way to put it, but we would say that it is altering or changing the already existing condition by having more of the 1 year be served.
So and more is increase, isn't it?
What? I mean, there are more jail days being done. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
But we would, if I may briefly, we would argue that that is distinguishable and that would fall again under that would fall under modification and that would not fall under the state of our term of increase the requirements, which would
I
be
understand your argument.
Okay, thank you.
So if I understand this right, but for these modifications in probation, Mr. Wilbur DeLiva would not have spent this additional time in jail, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. So he had the 1 year term of imprisonment and was released early. And then he would not have served the remaining part of that 1 year unless there was a modification.
So you're saying that's a change, but it's not an enlargement?
That is our position, yes. And again, you know, that's us looking at what was actually ordered in the case at the substance of what was ordered.
In order for it to have been an enlargement, how much additional time would he have had to serve?
So an enlargement would be adding an additional condition. So it would be, let's say he had, there are other ways to enlarge that aren't jail time, certainly, but hypothetically, if he had served the 1 year, they could then, or well, on the one that he had more time he could do, some were Class C, some were Class B felonies. So some are capped at 1 year. The Class B felony, he could have done another 6 months. So that could have had an additional condition adding more jail time beyond the 1 year.
Okay, so let me say it back to you. So you're saying he already was had a 1 year condition,
mm-hmm.
and they, as part of his whole probation, he didn't have to serve it all right away. So it wasn't an enlargement until he hit 1 year?
Correct.
That's
and then
I'll argue. Okay, but I know you're
and then it would be an additional condition.
I'm just trying to get to what her argument is, okay?
Yes. So if they added a condition, which they'd only be able to do on one of the four cases, because 1 year is the max that he could do on three of the four. But on the one that's a Class B felony, you can do up to 18 months. So they would need to add an additional condition. So condition T, add on to the end, that would be additional jail time. That would be adding or enlarging.
Okay. And so when I go back and look at the conditions, there's nothing over, there's no jail time over what was in the original probation special conditions.
Correct.
Form.
Yes. It did
that's
not.
That's your argument.
That's our argument, yes. And I note that the imprisonment was under special condition E, and that was for all four cases. There are no further questions. This time I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal unless there's anything else. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Nakasugi.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Judge Leonard, Judge Hirooka, and Judge Wadsworth. My name is Robert Nakatsuji, and I'm a deputy prosecuting attorney for the city and county of Honolulu. Although I'm not a stranger to this court, I believe this is the first time that I'm appearing for oral argument in front of your honors in particular. And I would like to say that this is an honor, and I'm very happy to be here. I'd also like to note that Ms. Pu'u from the Attorney General's office and I are dividing our time equally. So I have 15 minutes. May it please the court. The first thing I want to emphasize is that the plain meaning of the probation statute supports tolling of the motions for modification in this case. The Supreme Court has expressly stated that form is not to be exalted over substance. They have cautioned courts not to raise form over substance. And in the context of hope probation, motions for modification are, in substance, motions to enlarge. The way the hope probation program works is that defendants are given, quote, swift, certain, consistent, and proportional sanctions. Specifically, they're given a few days in jail every time that a violation of their conditions of probation occurs. Now, incarceration is a condition of probation. And because of that, giving a person more jail time means that these motions enlarge the conditions of probation. Therefore, in the hope probation context, motions for modification are inherently motions to enlarge under 706-627. That's how the program works. And pursuant to the plain meaning of a statute, these motions should toll. Furthermore, the court has already noticed the dictionary definitions. The 1990 edition of Black's Law Dictionary specifically defines the word modify as including, enlarge, and reduce, the exact words in the statute. Therefore, the plain meaning, based on the dictionary definition, encompasses enlarge and reduce. Again, the plain meaning of the statute, under the plain meaning, the motions for modification constitute motions to enlarge, and therefore the probation period tolls. Furthermore, the commentary and the legislative history of the statute indicate that the purpose of the statute is to prevent the jurisdiction of the courts from expiring when the probation runs out. The goal was to avoid making the defendant a free man, so to speak, even though he may have been committing acts that justified revoking his probation. So the purpose of the statute is designed for situations like this. In this case, the defendant is arguing that jurisdiction ran out, that he should be a free man. That's exactly the situation that we have here. Now, defendant primarily argues based on the evolution of the probation statute, specifically 706-625. And prior to 1986, the language in the probation statutes was not the best. There were references to increasing or imposing further conditions, references to revoking, references to modification. But all of that was cleared up in 1986. Act 314 made it clear what the legislature intended. And in Act 314, the legislature said basically that there's two types of motions, motions to revoke, motions for modification of probation conditions. It says that in the title, the heading of the statute. Okay, now if you look at the heading and you compare it to the text, it appears that within motions for modification, there's two subcategories, motions for modification that enlarge, motions for modifications that reduce. What we have in this case is a motion for modification that enlarges the terms and conditions of probation.
Mr. Nakatsu.
Yes, Your Honor.
So on that point, I believe in your answering brief, you say that the state's motions for modification of the terms and conditions of probation sought enlargement of the incarceration that was a condition of Mr. Wilbur de Lima's probation. Are you referring to the condition that we were discussing earlier, the one-year term?
Well, Your Honor, about that one-year argument, I'd like to point out that this argument was not made in the defendant's brief. It is a brand new argument that's being raised for the first time in oral argument. But I have an answer for that.
Please share it.
Yes, Your Honor. In probation cases, this is generally how defendants are sentenced. They're given 1 year subject to early release. And I think it's done because the 1 year is generally the maximum amount of jail time that a defendant can serve as a condition of probation. In this case, there was also a B felony, so he could have gotten a little bit more, but generally the 1 year is the maximum and it's subject to early release. And so what happens is the defendant doesn't actually serve the full 1 year. They are released early, so they serve a little bit, but they don't actually serve the full 1 year. And so when these motions for modification are filed, the jail time that they serve is the actual jail time that they serve. So that's basically added to whatever they serve prior to early release. So it might help the court to think of this as being a modification of the early release, because they're actually serving these additional days of jail,
but
which
it's
they
not,
didn't serve before.
But is it a modification, though, of the actual condition?
I believe it is, Your Honor. I believe that, you know, when they were originally sentenced, they only served a certain amount of time in jail because they were early released. With these new modifications, they're actually serving more days of jail. And it's basically being added to the time that they already served before they were early released.
So in order to come to that conclusion, though, we have to look beyond the actual condition to how it was applied, right?
I think, Your Honor, you do look at the condition, but you consider that defendant didn't actually serve the full 1 year. He was released early. So I think you are looking at the condition. You're modifying the early release, and in effect, you're giving him actual additional days of jail, which he didn't serve previously.
Mr. Nakatsuji.
Yes, Your Honor.
Who sets the early release date?
The early release date is the probation officer. It's at the discretion of the probation officer. And it's done because they want to release the defendant directly to a program. And if it's at the discretion of the probation officer, they can do that when there's space available in the program. Otherwise, if there's a hard and fast date to release him, he may not be getting into a program right away and it's setting him up for failure. So it's done when there's a spot in the program and when the probation officer exercises their discretion.
And in this case, the program is HOPE.
Yes, in this case, I believe he was released to a program.
Look. All right, so the original sentence includes or doesn't include HOPE probation as a condition?
Well, HOPE probation is kind of a description of the way that the person is supervised. I don't think it's specifically stated in the terms and conditions of probation. It's kind of a general description of how they're supervised. And it is a very different than regular probation. It's kind of a different way of supervision.
So it's a change in condition?
No, I mean, he's sentenced to probation, and the probation that he's got is a HOPE probation program. But it is really not specified in the terms and conditions of probation. It's kind of the way that the probation is managed. And if I could describe HOPE probation a little bit, that might make it clearer to you. In HOPE probation, defendants are given swift, certain, consistent, and proportional sanctions whenever they get a violation. And so the idea there is to change the defendant's way of thinking so that they begin to associate bad conduct with punishment. And it's actually very important because ordinary probation, very often defendant accumulates numerous violations before a motion for revocation is filed months down the line. So this type of probation, it's intended to teach the defendant to associate their behavior with punishment and to therefore change their behavior. And that's why in this case, it's important that more motions for modification toll, because if motions for modification don't toll, it sends the wrong message to the probationer. It tells the probationer that you can violate your conditions of probation and you're still going to get credit for the time you're on probation, which is really undermining the underlying message that HOPE probation really is trying to impress upon the defendants. So basically, the defendant's argument here, it undermines the program. It really sends mixed messages to defendants.
So are you saying that the sanctions that HOPE probation is authorized to impose constitute additional conditions?
They are additional conditions in the sense that they are serving more jail time. And it is, I think if you think of it as a modification of the early release, I think you are modifying the jail time that the defendant actually serves. And the purpose of the modification, again, is to change behavior. It's not punishment for punishment's sake. It's to change their behavior. But if motions for modification don't toll, then that really undermines the program. It undermines what the program is trying to do. And again, Your Honor, I think it's important to understand that this is not happening in a vacuum. This is not an abstract question. This is happening in the HOPE probation program. And in HOPE probation, these motions for modification are the primary vehicle by which these sanctions are imposed. It's basic to the program. And if the defendant's argument succeeds, it will undermine this program. This is a very important program. It's been a successful program as well. I've cited to the court a report, State of the Art of HOPE Probation. It's actually available on the judiciary's own website, and that gives a description of the program. But it's very important to this program that motions for modification toll. If the court agrees with the defendant and the motions for modification end up not tolling, I think one response would be to use motions for revocation instead. But motions for revocation have serious drawbacks. For one thing, on a motion for revocation, every time a defendant goes to court, there's a chance he's going to be sent away for the open term. That's going to be extremely stressful for defendants and really counterproductive because, again, you know, HOPE probation relies on consistency and proportionality. And if a defendant has to be afraid of being sent away for an open term every time he goes to court, that's going to be counterproductive. Now, the alternative is if the court doesn't revoke probation, replaces him on probation, that creates other problems because if a defendant is resentenced to probation, generally the term starts all over again. He loses all of the years that he was in compliance with the terms of probation, and he has to start from square one, a brand new 4-year term of probation. That's going to be tremendously discouraging to defendants. It's also not fair because, you know, it's disproportional. You know, they should be able to have credit for the time that they were on probation. But because of the lack of tolling, and we'll be forced to use motions for revocation. So what I'm trying to say is that the program is designed to use motions for modification for good reason. And if this court, just on this tolling issue, undermines that, it is really going to weaken the program. And it would be a shame to weaken a very effective and important program that has actually received national attention.
Thank you.
Now, Your Honors, I'm almost out of time, but I do want to briefly talk about the comity argument that defendant raised. Comity just really doesn't apply here. For one thing, their comity argument basically appeals the order for resentencing. And as the court has pointed out, there's some jurisdictional problems with challenging the orders for resentencing. But more than that, comity really only applies unless there's cogent reasons for departing from comity.
And I think that Ms. Haley stated that the defense isn't relying on law of the case.
Okay, so, Your Honor.
I mean, you're free to argue it if you want, but...
I just want to state our position that comity just doesn't apply here. There are changes in the circumstances, so comity doesn't apply. So, Your Honor, I think I have about 1 minute left. So just to, again, to reinforce what I've said, Your Honor, it's our position that motions for modification include motions to enlarge. A motion to enlarge is basically a subcategory of a motion for modification.
Mr. Nakatsuchi?
Yes, Your Honor. So
when the state brings these types of motions, sometimes do they call them motions to enlarge?
Well, Your Honor, the 10th motion in this case was actually entitled a motion for modification and or enlargement. And I think that highlights, though, the fact that the defense argument is really based on the title. It's form over substance. They didn't question the tolling of the 10th motion in the circuit court. So
were all of the titles motion for modification and or to enlarge?
Just the last motion,
the
10th motion. The prior 9 all were entitled motion for modification.
And so why was the last one? Let's forget the argument form over substance for a moment, but why was the last one titled differently?
I don't know for certain, Your Honor. It is the probation officers that file these motions. So I think by the time the 10th motion was filed, the probation officers, or at least one probation officer, decided to change the title, probably because the defendants represented by the public defenders were filing these kinds of arguments. And I think changing the title was an attempt to try to circumvent that argument. I think, though, ultimately the court still has to confront the question of what these motions for modification are, because you have older cases where motions for modification were filed. And so I think what we're hoping for is a clear ruling from this court that says motions for modification are in substance and inherently motions to enlarge and therefore toll. Your Honors, I think I am out of time, so I respectfully ask this court to reject defendant's arguments, affirm the circuit court in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Poo.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm assigned to the Criminal Justice Division of the department. We essentially house the statewide prosecutors for the department. In addition to handling the appeal in this case, I was also tasked with the circuit court procedure in this case. Basically, I was the prosecutor assigned to this case from the time of the defendant's first motion for modification in November of 2017. So I am well versed in the procedural history in this case. Although we're here on four separate cases, we are really here because of one case, and that is the 2015 case ending in 955. That is the robbery in the second degree case. That's Mr. Nakatsuji's case. And that's because it carries the 10-year term of incarceration. That is known very emphatically, clearly from the defendant's own words, based on the record of appeal at number 35, the transcript from the March 28th hearing, in his own words, where he states that he would not be seeking any challenge to this issue but for the 10-year term in that one case. Defendant is currently serving five separate open five-year terms of incarceration, including the one case that the AG is handling. And he did not have any issue with any of those cases. This bears relevance in examining the issue of jurisdiction that the AG raised in its appeal. Sorry, its answering brief to this appeal. Ultimately, the defense is challenging the timeliness of the state's motion for revocation that was filed in November 2021, saying it was untimely based on the examination of the tolling statute under 607. And that it neglected to emphatically include modification motions. It instead mentioned specifically revocations and also motions that involve enlargement of terms and conditions. Defense's claim is that his probation term lapsed in April of 2021 based on when his probation period started 4 years prior to that, based on him being resentenced to a term of probation in all four of these cases in April 2017. Yet the defendant stipulated to that motion, as he stipulated to all 10 of the prior motions to modify his probation with the assistance of the public defender, never raising any issue about tolling at any point in time, ever. That was at the motion to revoke his probation in February 2022. That was at the resentencing that occurred in December 2022. It was not raised until February 2023.
Ms. Poole, if the tolling doesn't apply and he was outside the court's jurisdiction, can't a jurisdictional argument be made at any time?
I'm sorry, you mean on the part of the defendant?
By anybody, even the court on its own may recognize lack of jurisdiction.
Well, under Asuncion, Your Honor, basically the court in Asuncion said that if the state fails to make a claim in regard to a defendant's probation, that basically the state is without any luck to pursue an avenue in terms of revoking a defendant's probation term. So if the state takes inaction on the part of a defendant who is floundering at probation, then they're out of luck in seeking to do so once that term of probation has expired. So
I'm sorry. I guess what I meant to ask is that the defense is saying that, I guess on the 10th motion.
Yes, sir.
The circuit court had no jurisdiction over me because my probation period had expired. And it's only if the tolling statute applies that the jurisdiction attached.
That's correct.
And so you're saying that the defense never raised the tolling issue below.
That's correct.
But I'm saying that isn't it true that the question of a court's jurisdiction may be raised at any time, even on appeal by any party or even by the court on its own accord?
It could be raised, certainly, Your Honor, but it still has to be found.
It's not a question of waiver because lack of jurisdiction can't be waived, can it?
Absolutely, but it still has to be found that there was jurisdiction. It still requires an actual analysis, and jurisdiction has to be found. I'm not saying it can't be raised.
In this case,
I'm saying
jurisdiction
that
is based on the tolling statute.
It is.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. And in this particular case, what we're arguing is that there is no jurisdiction, that based on the failure to challenge in a timely manner, basically the resentencing that occurred in December 2022, there was no timely challenge to that resentencing that occurred. Instead, what happened was there was a motion filed in February 2023, basically arguing some sort of an illegal sentence. There was no illegal sentence.
Well, wouldn't the sentence have been illegal if the court that imposed it had no jurisdiction over the defendant?
But they weren't raising a jurisdictional claim. They're raising an illegal sentence, which is a different issue.
They can raise it now.
They could.
And they did.
Even in this court, Your Honor, the appeal's not timely for different reasons.
Well, there's a lot of Supreme Court case law about untimely criminal appeals.
There is, Your Honor.
So let's not go there, but let's just address, you seem to be arguing somehow that the defendant waived the lack of the circuit court's jurisdiction. That's all I'm asking you. Are you or are you not saying that the defendant waived that issue by not raising it below?
It is partially a waiver argument, Your Honor, but there is also a jurisdictional piece to it. And it's an analysis that still has to occur.
I'm only talking about the jurisdictional argument. You don't have jurisdiction over me because my probation ended. Did they or did they not, according to the state, waive that argument by not making it to the circuit court?
I think there is a lack of jurisdiction, Your Honor, because of the untimeliness of the appeal that was filed in this court.
That's not what I'm talking about. The defense is saying the circuit court that resentenced me did not have jurisdiction over me. They're saying that in this appeal.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Assume this appeal is either timely or we have otherwise have jurisdiction over it, over the appeal. So the defense is saying the circuit court didn't have jurisdiction to resentence me because my probation was over. Is it the state's position that the lack of jurisdiction argument in the circuit court is waived because the defendant didn't make it there?
I think an argument can be made to that effect, Judge. Yes, I do.
Okay, so the state is making that argument?
Yes.
Okay, the argument lacks merit.
Understood, Your Honor. I'll move on.
Thank you.
In looking at the plain meaning of 706.627, subsection 1, the legislative history makes it abundantly clear that when you look at the plain language as it has evolved over time from 1977 as well as to 1980, that the legislature made an emphatic clarification to ensure that probationers would not be rewarded for floundering on probation or absconding on probation when they changed the words from shall and shall in subsections 1 and 2. And they made it clear that those who would be seeking a non-tolling of the probation period would have to do so by making a specific request to the court to not toll the probation period in situations where there was a situation where they should not be penalized. Basically, whatever the issue was that they were being brought to court to answer to, that it was not through fault of their own, that there would not be a resulting enlargement of the terms and conditions of probation, and that there shouldn't be a tolling to the period of probation. They would not need to suffer the consequence. There was no such request made by the defendant in any of the modifications here.
Ms. Pugu, I have a question, and I apologize if this was a question that should have gone to Mr. Nakatsuji, but so in looking at HRS 706-625, subsection 4, the court may modify the requirements imposed on the defendant or impose further requirements if it finds that such action will assist the defendant in leading a law-abiding life. The defense is making an argument or made an argument that there's a distinction between modify and imposing further requirements based on this language because of the or that's in subsection 4 there. What's the state's response to that argument?
The modifications that occurred in the 10 motions that were before the court in regard to this defendant over this period of time from 2017 to 2020, 9 out of 10 of them resulted in an enlargement of the terms and conditions of probation. Only one resulted in just counseling. And I would submit to the court that that was largely due to the fact that it was a temporary sitting judge on the Hope calendar. The motion was granted because there was a finding made that the defendant violated the terms and conditions of his probation and would benefit from the modification. But she elected instead to not impose an additional sanction or an enlargement of jail time. There was no situation where the defendant did not receive anything less than enlargement of probation.
And I understand that, but I'm focusing more on the language here in this particular subsection and I'm trying to understand based on what Ms. Haley was arguing, whether we have to define modify differently than impose further requirements based on this subsection 4.
I wouldn't read modification in this strict of a vacuum, Your Honor, especially in terms of the manner that it was applied to this specific defendant. The modification at issue in this particular case were not merely further requirements. If you want to read it as further requirements, the further requirements in this case were enlargements, which consisted of additional jail time.
Thank you.
And in that vein, they were all tolling. They tolled under 706.627. The the statute reads that the default under 706-627 is that it shall toll probation. And when the legislature revised this statute, it made subsection 2 and the non-tolling provision discretionary. And it did that very clearly to make sure that floundering probationers would not be rewarded for floundering on probation. And it also made it emphatically clear that a request had to be made and a finding had to be made by the court. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Haley.
May I? Thank you. So I had a few responses. So first, opposing counsel argued essentially that the 1986 amendment cleared up any prior confusion because there were a lot of different terms used. And one of the terms that they note had been cleared up was the term imposed further requirements. That still remains, and that is part of that or that was just brought up for questions. So again, I just refer back to my prior argument that subsection 4 of HRS section 706-625 says the court may modify the requirements imposed on the defendant or impose further requirements. So that language still exists. It was not cleared up by any amendments. I'd also note that opposing counsel made some arguments as to the structure of HOPE probation, which our position is that that is irrelevant to the statutory interpretation.
I'm sorry, Ms. Haley, I just want to go back something you said. So I understand you're making this distinction between modifying requirements and imposing further requirements. Yes. Isn't the state arguing, though, that in this case they modified a requirement by enlarging jail time? They didn't impose a different requirement or a further requirement, but they modified a current requirement that essentially imposed additional jail time.
It seems to me the argument, again, it's not my argument, but is that maybe modification is an umbrella term, or that's what they're trying to imply that enlargement can fall under. That seemed to me their argument. Our argument would be that modification is not an umbrella term that encompasses a reduction or an enlargement, but rather modification is separate. So you're looking at, I guess, four different terms. We have motion to revoke probation. No one's arguing about that one. We have motion for modification, motion for enlargement, motion for reduction.
Oh, I see. So a motion, your position is also that a motion for modification can't include a reduction.
It would be separate, yes. And that's based off the statutory language, because reduction is a separate term and it's under subsection 1 of HRS section 706-625. And again, the idea of a motion for reduction, that comes from that section. You know, it wasn't discussed in HRS 706-627. It wasn't excluded specifically. So we're trying to talk about what are different possible motions that change probation that would toll. So reduction arises from subsection 1 of 625 and modification from subsection 4.
How would one modify terms and conditions of probation other than either reducing or enlarging them?
So it would be by changing an existing term or condition of probation.
How?
So there's two examples in this case. I already talked about the jail time, but let's talk about the report to probation officer. So that was another consistent action that was ordered by the court as they did these motions for modification, was to report to the probation officer within 1 day or 2 days. So that also is a pre-existing condition. That was number 2 under the terms and conditions of probation. You shall report to your probation officer as ordered by the court. That would be another example of modifying or making a change where you're just saying, oh, you report to probation officer and we want you to report within 1 day or 2 days. So that's another example.
isn't that an enlargement by imposing a time limit?
No, we would. Our position is that that would not be an enlargement because it's not adding an additional condition. It's merely changing a pre-existing condition. In this case, that would be number two.
It would create a violation or probation that didn't exist before.
If they
didn't report within one day.
So
that would have been okay before. But when that was imposed, it created a situation where a violation could occur. Wouldn't that be an enlargement?
It wouldn't. And I'll just, if I can read just a little bit further on the actual, if you look at the condition itself. So it says, you shall report to your probation officer as ordered by the court or by your probation officer. So that was an order of the court. It's just changing that to make specific what that order would be, which in this case would be within one day. And I think that also goes to show of why, is that the type of change that we would want to be told? You know, if the only thing that was ordered, let's say we took the jail time out of this case. And also, I think the jail time part is a closer argument, okay? But there are other types of modifications that could fall into this bucket. So let's say reporting to the probation officer, if that was the only thing ordered, you know, is this something that needs to be told? Is this what was thought of by the legislature when they're talking about increasing the requirements or enlarging the conditions? So our position would be that that is changing a pre-existing condition that was already ordered versus adding a new condition, which would be an enlargement. So just returning to one thing that I wanted to address, which is the state's reliance on kind of the structure of HOPE probation. That's really irrelevant to the statutory interpretation. I'd note that this statute was written prior to HOPE probation being created and essentially has outlasted it as that HOPE probation is essentially defunct now. The state in their briefing referenced, I think it's the state of the art of HOPE probation. None of that should be considered by the court when doing the statutory interpretation. Okay. One moment, just look at my notes. I wanted to address the state mentioned the concern, and I'm sure the court was thinking this as well, is that is our interpretation going to cause circuit courts to constantly have to do a motion to revoke probation rather than doing a motion for modification or a motion for other options? I don't think that will be a problem. That implies that you always have to toll everything in order to get the results you want. Many of these motions could not have been tolled, and if you get close to the end of the probationary period, you could at that point file a motion to revoke probation, which is tolled, and you could resolve the issue. So tolling is not needed in order to make these changes. So I don't think that argument holds up. And again, if it's a more serious issue and that we're enlarging the conditions or a motion for revocation is needed, that's still an option and that can be filed before the term of probation is done.
Thank you very much, Ms. Haley. Anything else, Judge Hiroka? Judge Wadsworth?
No.
All right, thank you all.
Ikuiluna, all rise.